This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
It's now 7:13 and you're listening to Media Mornings here on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and online at w2media.ca.
I'm your host, co-host this morning, Erwin Ostindy, and with David Ball. And now joining us to keep that standard up is Bob Mackey. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. And did you have a chance to check out that Space Oddity yet?
Oh, I saw it when it was just hours old, released, and just a marvelous video. Yeah, I hope to see whether Chris Hadfield and David Bowie actually do a duet sometime on Earth, maybe sometime in Canada in the next few months or years.
I'm feeling very emotional. Like, it's an amazing video. It's just like the song is great to start out with, but
I think it's probably going to be on Stephen Harper's number one playlist too, eh?
Oh, indeed, they're going to milk it for everything it's worth.
So, do you think they're going to, you know, increase the funding to the space program as a result of seeing this video, or is that pretty much done?
They've cut it $25 million apparently this year.
Yeah, I think that might be the end result, or it might be Harper sending a message down to Obama, because, of course, the space shuttle program has been cut. So I think it's Harper sending a message down to Obama that, hey, Canadians can maybe do it better, or just to try to make it look like Canadians are stronger or have a more famous astronaut.
I mean, that would fit with the their overall kind of objective sort of lately of trying to pump up the Canadians' sort of prowess in terms of military and scientific kind of stuff. So, well, not scientific stuff so much, but Chris Hadfield kind of is a bit of both. Now, Bob, it's great to have you on the show today. You've been doing some stellar reporting, particularly on government transparency and access to information. You had another piece this week about being stonewalled past the election. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Well, that's right. I do a lot of FOI requests to government because we're allowed to. This is a democracy, and our politicians tell us they're being transparent. Well, I want to put them to the test. You know, we have to put them, put their feet to the fire and ask the tough questions. And for the most part, on all levels of government, they're failing. And especially here on the provincial side, where we have a premier who claims to be a champion of open access, of open data, of open information, when, in fact, failing grade, especially when it gets push comes to shove, when it gets close to an election, a crown corporation like BC Pavilion Corporation, which is a pretty simple crown corporation, they essentially are landlords for two provincially owned buildings in downtown Vancouver, the Vancouver Convention Center and BC Place Stadium, two buildings that have received about $1.4 billion of taxpayer subsidies for construction and renovation in recent years under the BC Liberals, and two buildings that there are a lot of questions about how they are actually managed, whether these are businesses that deserve to still receive government subsidies at a time when government funds are scarce, because the government funds are actually the people's funds. And there's a lot of other priorities out there that are asking for it, such as hospitals and schools. But you've got these two buildings in downtown Vancouver, especially BC Place Stadium, renovated with our money without our input. And the Liberals have made sure they put their own people in charge of these facilities. And I wanted to put them to the test. I have tried to put them to the test ever since January 2007, when the BC Place Stadium inflated fabric roof, the original one, ripped and collapsed on a day when it was snowy, and the people there at the stadium did not turn on the heat to melt the snow. It was a case of negligence. And ever since then, I've been taking a look at BC Place's operations and, of course, the very large expenditure on the new the renovation and the new retractable roof. Things I want to find out include, what do the Whitecaps and Lions pay for rent? Because the stadium was renovated for their benefit, but their owners didn't put any money into the capital funds. And I want to find out, well, what is their rent? Do they pay market rent? And BC Pavilion Corporation, which is under Rich Coleman, the Energy and Mines Minister, they don't want to tell the public about this.
And you'd think, Bob, in other cities, when they go into joint ventures for big arenas downtown, yeah, you might see a city or a government invest in some situations. In some cities you don't, in some cities you do. Sometimes there's lotteries. But it would be quite unusual that anchor tenants wouldn't even be part of that capital plan. And I'm wondering, what do you think of, in terms of the election campaign, Adrian Dix suggesting that he might be interested in selling that public asset?
Well, I think that was one of the game changers of this campaign. Of course, the Liberal response to that was quite weak. Christy Clark mocked that. And Peter Fassbender, who's chairman of PAVCO and also a Surrey Fleetwood Liberal candidate, wearing two hats at a time when he should have really stepped aside from his PAVCO chairmanship, then coming out with confusing messaging about the casino deal being done and extended to 99 years with Edgewater Casino for the BC Place Casino as a way almost of conveying a bit of a poison pill to say, well, you can't do this deal because we've already done this deal.
Right.
I thought that was quite weak, but I think Adrian Dix is on the right path to this, and I understand that there have been talks with people in the sports and entertainment industry here in Vancouver about getting them on this blue ribbon panel he wants to strike, and he said that he wants to do a blue ribbon panel to get the best and brightest people together to get recommendations in the first 90 days of NDP administration if the NDP wins, to plot the way forward, whether it is to go all the way with the privatization, and if not privatization, what can be done to make PAVCO a self-sufficient crown corporation. I thought that was a smart move, and it was announced on the same day that the NDP put out its platform, just hours before, and I thought that was a smart political move.
Well, and strategic because it obviously appeased to people who are supportive of privatization, but it also appeased people who were critical of the current government's management of that enterprise, and the fact that, you know, even you see here now Sandy Garasino intervening with on a legal basis, trying to put pressure on the, you know, even the legal framework of that casino move. So there's lots of ways that BC Place has handled the money being spent on it, and generally the lack of public access. It's not like it's open on Sundays for a free culture palace where the public can wander into their beautiful...
No, this isn't the British Museum.
Correct, yeah. So this is a publicly funded but privately managed, essentially, building, and I think you're right, the NDP did strike a smart move here because it really crossed all the political stripes of interest.
Now, one of the things you wrote, Bob, is that you talked about in your latest post on 2010 Gold Rush about this being a particularly nasty election, and you've talked about the lack of discourse around important issues like healthcare, education, crime, and the declining trust in public institutions. Could you say a bit more about looking back on this election campaign as we go to the polls today? What's your assessment of what we've seen?
Well, I think in some ways the Liberals have tried their best to try to frame the debate, and I think they did it in such a way that they started the campaign, I think, realizing what the outcome probably will be is that they will be in opposition. So they tried to frame it that way, and they tried, as a good opposition party would, to try to push the governing party to talk about the issues and answer the questions that need to be answered. At the same time, of course, we did see the Liberals put out all kinds of misinformation and disinformation about their economic record with this budget they say is balanced, which really is not yet balanced and it's not even passed, then trying to say that they've got this plan, this grand plan to wipe out the debt in 15 years when so many things can happen along the way in 15 years. We can see a couple of recessions, and we also know that they're trying to rely on liquefied natural gas, and we know how the Russians are a couple decades ahead of us on that count. So the Liberals have been trying to frame the debate during the entire campaign, and then when Adrian Dix made his announcement on Earth Day that he was going to oppose the Kinder Morgan pipeline, they tried to turn that into the big issue, tried to make him look like a flip-flopper.
He went back to the, remind me of the John Kerry thing in the States, the whole flip-flop thing, and it hurt him there, and they hoped probably it would hurt Adrian Dix here, a lack of leadership.
They did, and I think they may have underestimated it, because the strategies that Adrian Dix and the NDP were using on the provincial scale were quite similar to what Vision Vancouver used on the civic scale in 2011. The campaign on the high road, trying to be the better party and not be negative, that's what Gregor Robertson used in 2011. And then, of course, you have the anti-tanker stance, against the increase of tanker traffic and, of course, the pipeline. That's something that Vision Vancouver promoted quite heavily before the campaign started in 2011. Of course, they exploited the Gulf oil spill and tried to apply that here, a what-if scenario here, and certainly helped them politically get that second term. And, of course, what happened with that second term was the NPA which was opposing them, and Suzanne Anton, who was a mayoralty candidate at the time, now a Liberal candidate in this election, was taking the kind of tact that you see the Liberals are now in this provincial campaign. Suzanne Anton at the time was being quite critical, in some ways negative, not quite offering an alternative or hopeful alternative or a plan to go forward. So we're seeing things happen on the provincial scale that we saw happen on the civic scale, and the NDP, I think, has probably written off some of the rural vote and gone for the urban vote, which is where most of the ridings are centered, the quite dense ridings in Metro Vancouver, Fraser Valley, and Vancouver Island, and I think that's where they're going to win most of their seats tonight, and that will be what will help them get that majority.
Well, it's interesting that you kind of, the way you were talking a minute ago, it sounds almost like the NDP's campaign was to actually act as if they were already in government. So in some ways, both the Liberals and NDP kind of tacitly in their campaigning basically agreed that they'd switched places at the start of the campaign, in a sense.
Yeah, I think that's what I had to do. Because you've got one party which has been in so long, and they must have had internal polling and telling them that things were not looking good. There were a lot of other signs in this campaign that the Liberals were desperate. I mean, why else would they bring Kim Hackstad, who created the multicultural outreach memo, why would they bring her back? And why would they bring Brian Bonney back, who was also involved in the quick win scandal? Why would they bring them back? Why would they do some of the things they did if they thought they were really confident of victory? And of course, I think it all came undone last Wednesday of the campaign, when the Premier herself went out to vote, and her most important photo op in her career, the advance poll, and she screwed up her ballot.
She wrote her own name in.
We're watching.
Why was she writing her own name on her ballot? I never write my name on my ballot, or anyone's name on my ballot.
Well, for the advance polls, if you're an absentee voter, you were allowed to vote away from your district, and if you're doing that, then you could write in on the ballot the candidate you want, mm-hmm. and then it would be packaged mm-hmm. and sent to the riding to be counted. But, of course, it's one person, one vote, and she got confused. She does not live in Vancouver Point Grey. She lives in Vancouver Fraser View. Vancouver Fraser View is where Health Minister Margaret McDermott is, the Liberal MLA, who's running for re-election against George Heyman of the NDP, and she instead of writing Margaret McDermott's name, she wrote her own name. I chalked that up to a lack of preparation and lack of mm-hmm. advice. She seemed quite nervous. If you watch that video clip, she seemed quite nervous doing that, not terribly confident, and she did realize her error, but she did not cross out her own name. Therefore, whoever the scrutineers are watching over the elections, BC staff counting, are probably going to, when they see that, they won't know it's hers, but if they're watching closely at the ballots that go past their eyes, they should flag that one and say it doesn't count. A terribly embarrassing situation.
So, Bob, what are you going to be doing tonight when you watch the poll results come in? Are you going to be sipping a cold one, or in the middle of a media scrum downtown at the convention center? Or?
Well, I'm going to try to be all over the place, juggling a lot of balls in the air tonight. Going to be at the Liberal events to see what could be the end of an era. I'm going to drop by the NDP to see what could be the start of a new era. I'm going to be looking at one of the interesting races, the George Heyman versus Margaret McDermott race. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be out there trying to keep my eyes and ears open for any incidents throughout the day of any voter fraud or irregularities at voting stations. We've seen that happen in other elections. We saw, of course, the robocall scandal here in 2011 in Canada, and we saw, of course, over a couple of elections in the United States, that ugly situation rear its head, and hope it doesn't happen here. I'm hoping I'm not writing any stories or doing any radio hits about any voting irregularity, but if it does happen, I'm hoping that people will tell me and I can do some investigation.
Okay. Bob, appreciate you taking the time out this busy morning and getting your morning started with us here on the Media Mornings, and we wish you a good morning.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Bob Mackin, investigative journalist. He's published with the Taiyi, Business in Vancouver, and 24 Hour, and his own blog.
That is, 2010 Gold Rush. And check that out. Amazing journalist, and grateful for people like him still holding leaders to account.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independents like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maude Barlow.
We are continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at W2Media.ca.